The strategy the Air Force released on Wednesday is the latest in what service officials say is a trilogy of documents that will guide how the service operates in the coming years. This one tries to set a path to the deep future, 30 years out, and asserts that the single biggest challenge it will face over that period is the ability to adapt as quickly as potential adversaries will. Deborah Lee James is the Secretary of the Air Force.
The basic premise is that we never, ever seem to accurately predict the future. We never get it right. And so, therefore, we're going to have to continue to be able to step up to the plate and do a range of missions, and also that we need to get ahead of the curve when it comes to the enormous and very rapid change that we're seeing in our world. And I'm talking about changes in technology, changes in different nations and groups acquiring weapons, changes in how we communicate with one another. Whoever saw Facebook and Twitter 10 years ago? These are all enormous changes in a short period of time.
James says the concept of strategic agility applies to everything from how it trains and deploys its people, to how it acquires new technology, to how it organizes its own management structure. On acquisition, James says the strategy demands a move to more modular systems that can rapidly adapt to changing realities on the battlefield. The changes she wants to see, she says, start at the very front end of the acquisition process, when requirements are first developed.
When it comes to requirements, we're working to introduce strategic agility into our requirements process and acquisition systems to create a more agile structure that accommodates more frequent pivot points. And the modularity that I referenced earlier on means that we ought to be able to open competition to a broader group rather than solely relying on large programs which don't allow us the ability to adapt in the face of changing threats. So again, we feel like if we can get this right, it ought to maximize the bang we get for each buck by making it easier to integrate the best technological advances more quickly, and similarly to slough off elements or technologies that either aren't producing the capability that we wanted, or if the world changes over the 10 years of our development period and we don't need it anymore, we would be able to more easily get rid of it.
The Air Force says it's already begun the process of building adaptability into its systems. For example, James says the classified long-range strike bomber program is being designed with requirements that are achievable right now, but the system will also be adaptable enough to plug in new hardware and software in response to changes in technology without having to design an entirely new airplane.
Another fairly recent example where we have built in this concept is with the combat rescue helicopter, and that was just awarded last month. Now, the combat rescue helicopter, the CRH as we call it, is a skinny down version of a combat search and rescue set of requirements that has been around for at least the last decade. And with this new CRH, which we just awarded, we're modifying an in-production aircraft with flight-proven technologies. So basing CRH on these currently fielded capabilities should result in an expedited schedule, and we believe in a lower overall cost to the taxpayer.
General Mark Welsh, the Air Force Chief of Staff, says the service will also look for ways to build in more adaptability to its existing weapon systems, not just new ones.
We're talking about propulsion. Let me use an example there. If the Advanced Engine Technology Demonstrator Program proves that you can, in fact, create systems that save you anywhere between 30% and 45% of fuel costs, then we should be building into every fleet we have decision points for implementing that new technology in engine competitions to replace existing engines, because it will pay for itself very quickly. I just think we have to be able to take advantage of things as they change. It may not be a major mission area change overnight, but we should look for it at every level of our activity.
The problem on the acquisition side of the house is that we aren't the only ones involved in the process. And the process has to become more agile. I think all of us would agree with that. Everybody involved would agree with that. But how you get there from here is the problem. That's why this is a 30-year document. This isn't going to change overnight.
With respect to Air Force personnel, the new strategy laments the fact that the service has built up barriers between its active component and the Air National Guard and Reserve, making it less likely that airmen will move from one component to the other. For budget reasons, the Air Force has already picked 14,000 active duty service members for early separation this year, including 6,000 who are leaving the force involuntarily. So service leaders see themselves relying more heavily on the reserve components in the coming years. James says the budget picture demands a personnel system that lets airmen move more easily from one component to another.
You'll see us embed into policies and decisions and whatnot the concepts of more empowerment for our Air Force airmen, our members, more continuum of service, the flow between active, guard, and reserve and back in a more seamless way. More live virtual constructive training so that we can train in different ways than we train today. Diversity of thought, critical thinking skills for airmen. These are all the things that you can expect to see us work on when it comes to people and training.
James says the strategy will also drive the Air Force to a series of examinations about its overall organizational structure. And there, too, it's already begun to make some changes. The service has undergone a significant restructuring of its organizational chart within its corner of the Pentagon within the last year, and it's launched a buyout and early out program to accelerate Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel's instruction to cut military headquarters spending by 20%. Instead of making those reductions over 5 years, the Air Force wants to get them done in 1 year. James says service contractors make up the next round of the Air Force's effort to right-size its organizational structure.
So we're setting up a process. The Navy, I understand, had a similar process, and we're kind of taking a playbook out of the Navy, in which we're going to go through very deliberately and almost contract by contract, office by office, at least in the major headquarters elements, look and ask them to come in and justify to a senior team why it is that they continue to need these services. And through that process, we've already found some reductions.
James says another key component of the strategy is to examine all of the tools in the Air Force's toolbox and how they might apply to the future of warfighting.
So often in the Air Force, if we come across a challenge, our answer over the years has been, well, we need a new airplane for that. Or we need a new munition to go on an existing airplane for that. We think a lot about airplanes, right? That's our heritage. That's what we do. That's what our leaders have grown up in. But increasingly, we have to be able to open our minds and say maybe that challenge isn't necessarily met by a new airplane or a new munition on that airplane. Maybe we can get it done through cyber effects. Maybe we can leverage our assets in space. So it's that multi-domain approach of if you're trying to put steel on a target, for example, what are the various ways you can get it done? Because there's implications on costs and all the rest of it.
Officials made clear on Wednesday that while they don't quite know how much money they'll have to spread around to their service's five key mission areas, there are a handful of categories that won't be sacrificed due to budget cuts. James says the Air Force's nuclear weapons mission will be staffed at 100%, even if it's at the expense of other functions. And spending on cyber operations is also very unlikely to be sliced back under any budget scenario. Again, General Mark Welsh.
What it really calls for us to get our act together and where we're going to do in the cyber domain in the future. We are making a big change in cyber from an Air Force perspective, from a group of technologies that grew up supporting very narrowly focused technical support to human operations. That's where cyber began. And there's lots of organizations in our government who do that. They do it very well. The Air Force and air component commanders are worried about big effects on big battlefields because our job is to fight the big fight. So how do we reshape our thinking in the Air Force to think about executing the five core missions that are our only job? There's only five of them. How do we get to doing more of those jobs in the multiple domains that the Secretary mentioned? How do we do more ISR in and through the cyber domain, more command and control, more strike of different types? What kind of targets now open up to us, and what effects can we now produce that we couldn't before? That's the change the Air Force needs to make in the cyber domain. Make it mainstream to the five core missions of our Air Force, as opposed to a kind of a niche capability with really talented people doing it behind a green door.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, Federal News Radio.com and 1500 AM.